the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it with no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
D Square, the world's greatest podcast. We're going a little NBA theme right now because let's face it, I mean, it's game four. It's 2-1. Everyone thought it would be 3-0. Jimmy Butler goes for 40, doesn't make a three. Gets to his right hand, attacks. Too strong for Caldwell-Pope. Too tough for Danny Green. Too physical for anyone they tried to put on him. There's one guy. Like, here's the deal. When the Heat played the Bucks, everyone killed the Bucks for not putting Giannis on Jimmy Butler. LeBron James, guard Jimmy Butler. Everyone else stay home. That's what you need to do if you're going to win this game. Because I'll tell you one thing. The other dudes that are trying to guard him can't guard him. End of conversation. You let him get to his right hand. It's over with an A. And you think?
I do think, but here's where I have said forever, well, not forever. I've said during these playoffs, NBA coaching is awful. You got to know as a coach, this is where some of our colleagues that have never coached but act like they coached, this is something they can never understand. I'm watching Duncan Robinson, and Duncan Robinson lost confidence in the middle of that game. Had a wide open three, couldn't get a shot. He was 4 for 19. Now he's 5 for 20. They never left Duncan Robinson, and Jimmy Butler took advantage of it just simply going to his right hand with Duncan Robinson in the right corner where there was no help. See, I believe this, and I learned this from Bob Knight. As a coach, X's and O's are great. Sayings are wonderful. Go to clinics and say, you got to draw this up against whatever. But what I learned is you got to look in guys' eyes and you got to understand the game. Bill Belichick always talks about, and I remember myself, Coach Knight, and Belichick having a conversation about this. Every game is
organic. Name dropping Belichick. Very nice.
Yeah. Every game is organic. Every game is different. What may have worked for a guy yesterday doesn't work today. And I couldn't believe that Frank Vogel, well, I could believe, I've seen Frank Vogel coach, didn't understand that Duncan Robinson had nothing going, and you're going to let a guy, the best player on the team, kill you over and over. And as you said, Seth, zero threes attempted, whipped them going to – I just think NBA coaching is god-awful. I think it's ridiculous. Spoelstra knew it, so he never took Robinson out. Robinson played like 40-some minutes in the game because he didn't have to – he just stood there and he gave space. Anyway – Butler was great. LeBron's got to guard him. If LeBron guards him, Butler will get maybe 12 against LeBron. That's it. And the series will be over. But I'm not sure Vogel can figure that out.
All right. I'm going to give you my second take. LeBron walking off the court, 10 seconds left in the game. Here's my take, Seth Greenberg's take. That was basically, anyone else did that, they'd get killed. I mean, like Isaiah Thomas walked right by the Bulls, he got killed. Here's my take on the thing. First of all, I think it's unacceptable. It's wrong. But I talked to a bunch of NBA guys yesterday, and they say that is a typical LeBron basically telling everyone else on his team that he's pissed and some guys weren't ready to play. Now, having said that, LeBron had a bunch of turnovers. Jimmy Butler beat him a couple times. But that was LeBron being LeBron saying, you know what? This is some BS. You know, we had some guys that weren't locked in. We needed to get this thing over with, and I'm out of here. Your thoughts?
I thought it was great. Tell you why. I just read Deshaun Watson, who is supposedly a great NFL quarterback, who Dabo Sweeney says is the next Michael Jordan at a press conference. He's 0-4. 0-4, just got his coach fired. And he's talking about, well, you know, I'm not going to lose my joy. I'm going to live my life. That's crap. I want guys that are leaders to be pissed, and I want them to show the rest of the team that they are pissed and you have to live up to my standard. Look, people get on LeBron for a lot of things, but I don't think you can get on LeBron for not caring.
Oh, 100%. Great.
Yeah. And so I thought it was great. I'm glad your NBA guys said that, frankly, because that's exactly what that was. Hey, man, LeBron isn't Danny Green, LeBron isn't one of the guys. I never knew this until I went to college and we had two players that were seniors, Randy Whitman and Ted Kitchell. And they were not, they were above me. They were, you know, when they, what they said went. So I get it. I love it. I got no problem with it. Isaiah's deal was a problem because it was at the end of the series where teams normally shake hands. But now, Seth, now I think you're going to see, at least in crunch time, LeBron have to answer to that and guard Jimmy Butler. Get into Jimmy Butler and do what he expects of others to do. I thought it was good.
I did love what Spoelstra did. I thought they got into the ball more, so they pushed everything out. I thought they swept Anthony Davis, got him off the block a little bit so that they could scrape and double, or if they threw over the top, like Jimmy Butler had that great weak side help where he rotated over and took the charge. I thought what they did, getting the ball out of the middle of the floor and pressuring the perimeter guys a little bit more and not guarding Howard, I thought that was really, really good defensively.
Yeah, and Seth, think about it. I mean, I think they took more threes than they did twos. They just, the Lakers got to settling. And, you know, hey, Seth, you know this better than I. The world of professional basketball is all about analytics, and you're supposed to shoot threes. Hey, but don't discount the good old free throw, brother. Don't discount getting to the free throw line, putting pressure on that defense. And that's what Jimmy Butler did, and I agree with you on the defense. Now, I think what needs to happen for the Lakers is simply this. Their drivers need to drive. You know, LeBron needs to go to the rim. And I don't – look, LeBron sometimes will basically hang out, dish the ball for about three quarters. Personally, if I were coaching the Lakers, I'd like to see LeBron be so freaking aggressive right from the start of this game just to let everybody on that court know the king is here. That's what I would like to see. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I'm going to think you see that. And then the other thing is Anthony Davis. Everyone's killing Anthony Davis, and he's got to be better. You know, he got in foul trouble. But a lot of that had to do with, you know, the heat got into him, got into his legs, pushed him out, doubled him, gave him different looks. And then I thought he kind of gave in a little bit. I thought Anthony Davis gave into it. But, like, you know, like, we're so overreactionary to one game.
I mean,
it's like, he wants to be thought of as a great player. You know what? Here's the deal. These dudes have been in bubble. And this is the other thing I got from one of my guys. He said, they've been in the bubble since July 1. Since July 1. That's July, August, September. We're into October. He said, you know what? It's just human nature. You know, I mean, like, July 1, that they've been there for over 100 days. And like, in a way, it's emotionally and mentally exhausting, even for these were two guys whose teams were there but got white beat. And they just said, you know what? It's just part of it. It's different. There's no home court, which is obviously an advantage, but it's different. But it tests your kind of your mental.
Oh, Seth, I think it tests everything. Like I've said, like if I got sentenced to a year in prison in a hotel with room service and laundry, but I couldn't leave the hotel, man, that'd be miserable. I mean, so I'm totally with you on that, man. I think that
it's actually the same food every day. You can only so many times.
I think NBA teams have handled it really well. And I want to say something else, Seth, because people are making a big deal about the NBA ratings being down. And they are. Okay, fine. But you can, you know, many people will say, well, I don't like the politics, the social. Okay, fine. There's probably people that do that. But in my mind, the NBA playoffs has the greatest lead-in for basketball ever with the NCAA tournament. Man, what do you think of in March, the NCAA tournament? April comes. Here comes the NBA, the Masters. And it carries because there's nothing else going on. It doesn't feel like basketball NBA playoff
time. It's football season now. Look, the NFL's going, college football, the SEC's back, Big Ten coming. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, it feels like Friday night they had a game. Well, you know what Friday night feels like? Feels like high school football in most places. So I don't
and
read too much.
Thing called an election going on.
Yeah, I mean.
Let's face it, that's theater every day.
It is. But it just doesn't feel like basketball. You know, it just doesn't. So, okay, the ratings are down. That's fine. But I think the guys in the NBA have handled this as well as it could possibly be handled. I do. I mean, and the NBA has put together, through their bubble, through their initiatives, a season. Which, you know what? Hey, man, that's great. Goodbye, me.
I agree with you. Oh, and by the way, my Yankees looked pretty good yesterday.
Oh, man. Giancarlo Stanton.
Bam!
Slam.
He has 3 home runs in the playoffs. He had 4 all season.
Yeah, and he had 2, I think, opening night or something. He had a bomb opening night. Seth, the deal, look, when Aaron Judge hits a ball, man, that's a screamer to left for a home run. My Cubs are out. I'll root for the Yankees because my dad rooted for the Yankees, Maritz and Mantle and those guys. So there you go.
Hey, I'll tell you what. It's good. And Cole, worth the money so far. He gives up too many home runs, but he's worth the money.
Yeah, but when he needed a strikeout, he just threw one up at a hundy and adios. And you know, I faced 100-mile-an-hour fastball twice in my life. I swear to you, it defies physics. The ball rises. A ball can't rise. The thing rises. It's unbelievable.
Did you make contact or not?
I fouled one off and then struck out. Yeah, no. No, but back in those days, if a guy threw 92, he was throwing hard. But 100 miles an hour, man, high, right-handed hitter, you're not touching that. And your boy.
I thought Britt was pretty good.
Yeah. All right. The Yankees got it done. White Sox and Benetti out. Cubs and Dockage out. Southern Indiana Reds out. My baseball life stinks right now. Go Yankees. Hey, Seth, let me go to college basketball real quick. The other day, maybe it was yesterday, I get my days mixed up. They announced, you know, how many games were going to be played, 25, 27, yep. Hell, Seth, you, me, and Taylor broke that on this show 2 weeks ago.
Yes, we did.
What the hell? I mean, that's not news to us. That's what.
Why would anyone pick it up? You have to listen to the thing to pick it up. I mean, one of our people. So, you know, what's the difference? I mean, why would anyone pick it up?
Hey, also on college basketball, I got to ask you this because a lot of people are asking me, and I don't know the answer. We're hearing all of these things. Illinois is going to host an MTE. Okay, great. What does that mean? Does that mean fans? Does that mean a round robin? Is there a tournament? Is it on TV? What
it's
does that mean?
Games and no, only the Orlando and those things are and the champions and you know the Wooden and those will be on TV. I think there'll be some other specific games. I thought CBS did a great job getting Baylor and Gonzaga together for a game. I thought that was.
I told you last week. And they should have picked it up somewhere. The Sports Corp in Indianapolis, they're not done either. There's going to be a couple more games coming like that to Indianapolis from what I was told yesterday.
Yeah, well, you know what? I saw it on your Twitter. Downtown Indianapolis is back.
Downtown Indy's back, baby. We got a little bit of a murder problem, but that's all right. We'll get that solved at some point. But no, look, so you don't think the Big Ten Network – who covers all Big Ten games will pick up, for example.
Oh, yeah, they'll pick up. So, like, here's the deal. What's happening in the SEC, maybe in the Big Ten it'll happen, some ACCs. Like Leonard Hamilton told us 2 weeks ago, he said, he's not taking his team all over the place. He's going to play Florida at home in a rivalry game. He's going to play ACC Big Ten at home. He's going to schedule 3 games. Other schools are going to say, you know what? I'm bringing 4 teams or 5 teams to our campus. We're going to get our 4 games, our MTE. We're never going to leave campus. Then the thing at the Mohegan Sun's creating an MTE for more mid-major teams. You know, the Siennas, the Hartfords, the George Washington. I don't know if George Washington, the George Washington, the Vermonts, the Ionas. Like Iona, Rick Pitino's going to play 4 games in the Mohegan Sun. So they drive 1 hour right up the road or 2 hours up the road. They get 4 games. They stay at the Mohegan Sun. They're staying in a restricted, limited access environment. That's what I think that's what's going to happen. But like everyone's going, well, they're going to do an MTV and they're going to do it. And well, you get a trophy and you get a trophy. It's not that hard because of the testing and then the protocol.
But what do you think the TV aspect? Because everybody, I got so many people asking me, are they going to be able to see Indiana? Are they going to be able to see Purdue? Are they going to be able to see all the games? Because you know what? between ESPN, CBS Sports Network, and the Big Ten Network and Fox, basically in the Big Ten world, you see every game.
Like, you'll see the Big Ten. You're going to see the Big Ten games. You can see the SEC games. You're going to see the ACC games because the ACC Network, the SEC Network, the Big Ten Network. I mean, you're going to see those games. You're going to see all our normal events. You're going to see, obviously, the ACC Big Ten Challenge. You're going to see some made-for-TVs. But, yeah, like the Big Ten, the ACC, the Pac, I mean, because they have their own networks, those guys need programming, man. Like the Pac-12, I mean, they don't have enough programming right now. I mean, everyone needs programming. So you're going to see those things. But I think, as you know, there's going to be a lot of remote TV, man. It's going to be a lot of Remy's.
You know what? And we're going to have Buzz Williams on. But truthfully, I don't really notice. I don't really notice whether or not. I've been watching college football. I don't really notice that broadcasters aren't there. Now, I don't know. Maybe I'm just not that smart or that attentive to it. But personally, I'm there to watch a game. And, somebody said, I forget who was doing the game. And they said, well, we're not even there. And I was like, oh, really? I didn't even know that. So I don't think that's a.
Hey, we got to call Buzz Williams. He just sent me a text message. We're going to bring in right here SEC Coach of the Year last year, did a great job at Texas A&M. But more importantly, Coach, what has your life been watching your guys just compete their asses off in the NBA playoffs?
I've never experienced it, obviously, at this magnitude. It's been really fun. And I don't say any of that with a hint of arrogance. It's almost humbling. I've watched every single minute of every game with Jimmy and Jay. I watched every single minute of Wesley with the Bucks. Nikhil was in the bubble. They got beat in the 8-9 game. So it's been really cool. Really, really cool.
I got to ask, because everybody, they're talking about it, but tell me about the recruitment of Jimmy Butler to Marquette.
I don't know. People have kind of texted me and DM'd me a lot of strange stuff. You remember some of this, Coach Dockich. Coach Kareem left Marquette on April the 1st, and it was not an April Fool's Day joke to take the job at Indiana. I was on the road recruiting that particular day. I was in Texas. I was at Tyler Junior College. Joe Fools, who's now on our staff here, I went down to see him. I had signed him at Texas A&M as an assistant. He went to a prep school. I signed him at New Orleans as the head coach. I left and went to Marquette. He went to Tyler Junior College. I signed him in the fall when I was an assistant at Marquette. And then on April the 1st, I'm in Tyler, and the secretary from Marquette said, you need to get on the next plane back to Milwaukee. Coach needs you at his house. Well, I'd only been in Milwaukee for 6.5 months. So I had never even been to Coach Kareem's house. So I fly back on a connector flight to get to Milwaukee. I call the secretary and I said, if you don't mind, I don't know how to get to Coach's house. I go to Coach's house. I knock on the door. And you guys know Coach Kareem better than I do, but he's very professional in how he carries himself, how he dresses. He's very self-conscious of his appearance. So I knock on the door, never been there. He doesn't really know me. I don't really know him. And he's wearing a hat. And I was like, I had never seen him wear a hat. And he's wearing sweats. And I had never seen him wear sweats. And so I haven't even walked into the house. And I go, hey, Coach, is everything okay? He goes, Buzz, I'm glad you're here. We need to talk. So we walk in his entryway. And I see the whole staff from Marquette sitting in the living room. And I'm like, man, wonder what's going on. And of course, I was the new guy, Tim Buckley, who had been with Coach for two different occasions for a long time. Benny Seltzer, who had been with Coach for a long time. Miss Kareem was there. And I'm like, man, this wonder what I've walked into. And we go to his laundry room. Like, we walk in the entry room. And I see the staff and I'm like, hey, Coach, how you guys doing? And he's like, hey, Buzz, let's go this way. Well, I don't know where we're going because I haven't been to his house. We go in the laundry room. He goes, Indiana's offered me the job. And I was like, congratulations. He goes, well, I got to make a decision before 5 o'clock. And I was like, okay, coach. He's like, what do you think? I go, coach, I probably ain't the right guy to ask about a job. I just resigned at the University of New Orleans as the head coach. Like, I'm probably not the right guy. I interviewed 14 times with every constituent possible to get the Marquette job, not deserving of the chance whatsoever, had a losing record, was an assistant, et cetera, had no chance to get the job. And then on April the 8th, I got the job. And so before the press conference, I called Joe at Tyler and said, hey, Joe, I just wanted to let you know later today, they're going to announce that I'm the head coach at Marquette. Just wanted to let you know everything was good. And he goes, coach, do we need to sign some players? And I was like, yeah, we got to sign some players. I said, why are you talking about that? I was just calling to talk to you. You know, Joe's 19 years old. He goes, coach, I think we should sign my roommate. Well, I knew who his roommate was, obviously, because I had signed Joe and been to Tyler multiple times. And he said, I think we should sign Jimmy. And I go, is he any good? He goes, coach, he's good. And I said, okay, well, look, man, I know you don't really understand what's going on, but there's a lot going on today, and it's kind of a big deal. And so I'm not going to be able to call you until tonight. So I'll call you tonight. You talk to Jimmy. And when I call you tonight, let me talk to Jimmy. So go through the press conference, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That night I called Joe. Hey, Joe, how'd it go with Jimmy? Coach, he wants to come. I said, okay, well, let me talk to him. I said, hey, Jimmy, Joe says you want to come to Marquette. Is that right? He goes, coach, if you want me to come, I'm coming. I said, okay, well, look, man, you're going to be the first guy we've signed because you're the only, quote, recruit I've spoken to. I just got the job this afternoon. So I'll send you the papers and you sign them and get them back to me. He said, okay, coach. So I FedExed the papers to coach and he gave them to Jimmy. Jimmy called me. Joe called me. Hey, coach, he signed the papers. What are we supposed to do? I said, well, if you can fax them back to me, we can announce that we signed you. And then you FedEx the originals back. Just give the papers back to Coach Marquis. He'll know what to do. They said, well, coach, we're going to go to McDonald's. You think they got a fax machine? I said, well, you have to ask them. So they went to the McDonald's and Jimmy faxed his NLI to Marquette. And that was literally the story. I mean, that's the truth.
Had you a Big Mac and a quarter pounder? That's what I want to know.
That's exactly right, coach. That's exactly right.
Hey, so you had seen him enough to know, or did you were just simply taking Joe's word?
Yeah, I would say, to be honest, Coach Dockage, it was a combination of both. Jimmy was a good player. He was a qualifier out of high school. He was ranked 72nd in the state of Texas. Both of you guys know him as coaches. Mike Kuhnstadt, longtime high school coach, started the first state of Texas scouting service. When I was a kid in junior college, I worked Coach Kuhnstadt's camp. I worked as the scorekeeper at the Great American Shootouts. He had Jimmy 72nd. The kid that was 71st went to the Citadel, and the kid that was 73rd went to a Division III school. He had a good freshman year. Very similar, obviously not at the same level, but just kind of do a little bit of everything. Not great at anything. Not bad at anything. But I also did trust Joe, and I was 34 years old, and consumed and overwhelmed. And I'm like, okay, that's good enough. Like, I just want to sign somebody. I'm the coach. I shouldn't be the coach. I don't know what I'm doing. I haven't hired a staff. And it was kind of one of those, it's the spring and yeah, we'll just take him. And, but I didn't necessarily think he was a bad player, but not that I had any insight into what he was going to become at all.
So now his DNA is he's an absolute guy that's just going to draw a line in the sand, just fight every single possession. When did you know that he was like that? Like we all want to have a guy that we know, like, here's the deal.
Yeah.
Dude showing up every single night. I don't have to worry about Jimmy Butler. I'm not have to worry about those other four jokers. Jimmy Butler is going to make sure that the other four guys are going to be right. Like, when did you figure that out?
The one thing that I would say on that, coach, is I don't know if you had it at Long Beach because I didn't know you then. I don't know if Coach Dockett had it early in his career at Bowling Green. Like, I don't remember, and nor did I know you guys at that age, but I had an edge to prove that I could do the job. And that was a little bit of my ego wanting to prove. I know nobody thought I could get here, but since I was given a chance that I didn't deserve, let me prove that I can do it. And I do think that Jimmy has always had that same sort of edge. And I would say from the very beginning, not that I thought he was a good player, not that I thought he was a pro. I never coached him in that light, so to say. But I did coach him with a very hard edge. And he understood that language because relative to the steps he was walking, he wanted to prove he belonged as well. And I think that as his career unfolded, yes, he became more productive, but the edge in which he played with and competed with, not just on game day, but every day, was a very distinct line in the sand, as you said. And you guys know some of those guys, Jay Crowder, Darius Johnson Odom. There were some talent, more talented players than Jimmy relative to their gifts. But relative to the edge, he's just like he said on Sunday night. I mean, he dominates the game. And they ask him, what about this and the triple-double? No, none of that matters. We won. That's what matters. And that's how he showed up every day. And he was a different teenager than most in that he didn't think he had another choice. So, like, hey, Jimmy, don't eat those potato chips anymore. It's not good for you. Yes, sir. Jimmy, if you drop a class, you're going to have to take the Greyhound back home. Yes, sir. Jimmy, if you're ever late, you're going to run 5 miles at 5 a.m. for 55 days. Yes, sir. Like, you only had to say it once. But relative to his maturity, you know, he's not playing Xbox. He's not maybe hanging out on the weekends. Like, he just became consumed with what is it that I can do? And a part of that was trying to prove that he was good enough. But a part of that was he wasn't thinking, well, if this doesn't work out, you know, I can do this or I can do that. He was thinking, this is the only chance I've got. And so it propelled him even more with the combination of his edge and his mentality towards, I'm not going to waste a lot of time in what I'm doing. You know, he got the same Subway sandwich every day at lunch. The same Love sandwich that. every day. And it was from his class. Subway was across the street. He ordered it, got it in the little paper sack, and he came straight to the office. And he was there every day at 12:20 to watch clips, and not necessarily clips on the opponent. No, I need to learn how to watch and study tape. And he was like that, you know, like, you know, you guys know, like, if me or you stretch our team, it's like, hey, you know, put your feet together, touch your toes, put your right foot over your left foot, touch your toes. It's kind of that sort of stretching. But like when you tell your strength coach, hey, do that fancy stretching, do that dynamic stretching. Like he wanted to learn. I want to do that by myself. How do I do it? And why do I do it? He wanted to understand the why more so than 98% of the world that is in this industry.
Hey, Buzz, was he a rodeo guy? Did he break horses or ride bulls?
No. Yeah, he just, I know, you know, bits and pieces of his story, but, you know, he didn't live with his biological parents after he was 13 years old. And so, he probably had more exposure to country music than the typical guy from where he's from. And so, like, I can't remember who was asking me that last week in an interview. Like, he likes country music, not because he's trying to be funny. No, that's what he grew up listening to. And when he would be in the truck with me I'm not changing the station because we listen to the same station. You know what I mean? And if you shuffle his iPhone the same way you would shuffle mine, you're going to hear that same genre. But was he like, I grew up on a ranch and I know how to break horses and I hauled hay? No, he wasn't that. But like, he was around that. So that music, that's what he grew up listening to.
Now you got him, then you got Jay. Like Jay's deal is that dude, he's matching up with Anthony Davis, trying to get his ass off the block and get him one step further out. And he went through a stretch where he couldn't make a shot. Yet now he seems like he's got it back. What makes it like, what's he all about?
His instincts as a player are as good as I've ever been around. Average athlete, above average strength, okay ball handler, can get it where he needs to get, can see the next play offensively and defensively at a high level. You know, he took more charges in the Big East as a senior than any player in that league. He took 29 charges that year, more than any player thus far in my career. And you know, like, and you guys remember the chronological order of this, but Wesley Matthews was there our first year, was an undrafted free agent, played with the Jazz in summer league, and Kyle Korver hurt his leg. So he was on a non-guaranteed deal through whatever it was, January the 1st or whatever the cutoff was back then. Korver, they released him to come back and he tweaked it again. So Wesley got to stay on the team for that year. And then he signed the largest undrafted free agent contract in the history of the NBA then, and it still holds true now after 1 year because his deal was not guaranteed. He signed $25 million with the Blazers after 1 year. Lazar was a first-round pick that following year. Lazar was a good player, had some of the same similarities, in my opinion, that Jay had, but to some degree, he was drafted because maybe certain teams felt like they missed on Wes. The following year, Jimmy was a senior. Jimmy worked out for 17 NBA teams. And you guys know this. If you're having to work out for that many teams, it's because nobody knows if you're any good or not. It's not because you're so good that you're going to 17 teams. It's because they can't make a decision. So Jimmy was drafted in the same spot as Czar from the previous year. And I think that was a little bit of what Wes started, a little bit of the rookie year that Czar had for the Timberwolves. And then the following year, so going into Jay and Darius Johnson Odom's senior year, Jay received 0 votes in the preseason Big East poll. Now think about this. Jimmy was never first team, second team, or third team All Big East in his whole career. He was only honorable mention, which is the scrap votes of the coaches, as you know. And Jay was not preseason as a junior or a senior and became Big East Player of the Year as a senior. And DJO was the leading scorer of the Big East. And we went to the Sweet 16 again that year. And I think that losing Jimmy hurt, of course, but the instincts of Jay on both ends of the floor is why I think he's been successful for the last 8 years in the pros. But like when those guys, Keith Grant is the one that drafted Jay for the Mavericks, and he was calling me in all of the pre-draft stuff. Keith Grant was a manager at Oklahoma City University, which is where I was a manager at my last 2 years. So I had known him since he was a manager for Abe Lemons. And he would call and he would say, Buzz, this and that. And I would always say, Coach Grant, I don't know. I can't answer those questions. I've never been in the NBA. I don't know. But I can just tell you, he doesn't completely look the part, but I can't take him off the floor. So if that translates, then I think he's a good player. But does he look good? Is he fast? Can he run? Can he jump? He's just okay, but he's really hard to take off the floor because he impacts winning. And I think that's partly like he's played for six teams, and it's the same scenario with every team. Brad Stevens calls me when he's with the Celtics and he's like, Buzz, he just loves to practice. He loves to compete. He loves to work. And over time, he just ends up being the fifth guy. Like, yeah, he gets to play. And I think he's made a career out of that.
Pretty good career. How do you put together a schedule in the pandemic?
Coach Greenberg, I don't have an answer to that. And like when we were texting yesterday, I was thinking, okay, now I need to feel like it's three coaches talking. I need to feel comfortable. I say no to all. No media even calls me anymore because I don't speak to half of them and they think I'm weird. And so it's just kind of dissolved. So nobody talks to me anyway, which is probably good. But I'm like, yeah, it's Coach Greenberg. It's Coach Dockett. They've been knowing me forever. I love those guys. They're coaches. I can do this. And then last night I'm thinking, what the hell am I going to say? Like, I don't know what to say because what's going on is unprecedented. But the one thing that I will say that I've learned, some of the things that I took for granted, like let's go recruit, let's go to this event. Hey, let's do an individual workout. Hey, let's do some extra skill work. Hey, let's have a practice. I'm not going to take that for granted the rest of my career. And the one thing that has been positive that I've learned, and I would say that you guys have said this thousands of times post your coaching career, and I know Coach Dockett's son, I know Coach Greenberg's three daughters, but I became a lot better dad. And I became really convicted during the quarantine, during all of this uniqueness. Like, man, I've spent so much time with other people's children, and I'm glad I've had an opportunity to learn from them and be a part of their life. And I've done okay as a dad, but I haven't been a Hall of Fame dad because I've spent so much time thinking that I was going to try to be a Hall of Fame coach. And I've spent more time over the last month with our team talking to them about what did you learn? Because we can't lose the lessons that we've all learned over the last 7 months and not apply it not only to our team, not only apply it to our families, but we got to apply it to our life. Because if we don't, if we just pick back up like, oh, okay, things are kind of close back to normal, then we've aborted the process and we haven't taken the wisdom that can come from it. And I've enjoyed being around our players more than ever before. And I've always enjoyed being around kids, but like, I don't want to take my job, what comes with my job, the people on our staff, the people on our team, the student managers, man, I need to love on them better. And I need to not take for granted that everything's just going to stay normal. And so you guys know that I work for Coach Lehrer at Colorado State as an assistant. He was with us 1 year at Marquette, went on to become the head coach again at Liberty. He was with us our last year at Virginia Tech. He was with, and then he came with us here to A&M. So Coach hired me in 2000, and he's like, create a job. This is my guy. He gave me a job that didn't have a hyphen in the name or a direction in the name. I'm always going to take care of him because he at least gave me a chance in this business. And so I've hired Coach every time I've had a job and he's needed a job. And so he's always handled scheduling. So when all of this stuff started, well, if this and then that, and we're going to do this and that, the league says this, and we'll wait till the NCAA makes a decision. I told him, Coach Greenberg, in like July, I said, Coach, you know that I still work for you, right? And it's always been that way. You don't work for me. I work for you. But I'm going to ask you the only thing I've ever asked you. He's like, Buzz, I'll do whatever, anything you want. I said, Coach, do not ask me about scheduling ever again. He's like, no, Buzz, there's a lot of moving parts. I go, yeah, I know. You make the decision that you would make if you were the head coach at Texas A&M. Leave me alone about it, because I can't give any more energy and emotion to all of this stuff. And is that immature on my part? Maybe. But like, you get to spending all this time, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and then 2 days later, something changes, and all the time you spent on it was a waste. And so I just bankrupt on giving my energy and emotion and time to that sort of stuff. So we'll see. If we lose a bunch of games, I'm blaming it on coach.
Last thing before we let you go, you mentioned working out players and stuff like that. What?
Yep.
All right. You got to have protocols, right? Every school, you guys are, yeah, you know, big time school. How difficult has this been? Yeah. What's the procedures for just simply having a workout?
A lot. And whatever the adjective is above a lot, that's what it is here. All of the protocols specific to the virus in our state, the virus in our county, the protocols by the administration, the protocols by the athletic administration. I think of all of the times in the world that you would want to be an administrator, it would be any time other than COVID. Like, I think that the decisions that are having to cross these ADs and sport administrators' desk, I think it's overwhelming. And I think our guys, Ross Bjork, Justin Moore, they've been off the chart good. But like, as a coach, like the question you just asked, hey man, all of that stuff that you're saying, all these emails, all these lists, the trainer, the medical task force on campus, the team doctor, like all of that stuff, can you just boil it down? Can you explain to me, when can we have four kids in the gym at one time? How do we do that? And it's been, it's a lot, Coach Dockett. It's a lot. And we're getting close to being able to, maybe we can do some team stuff, but we're relative to the lens that we see things through as a team, we're way behind. Can we make up some ground? Maybe we can make up some ground if we stay in this flow, if we stay safe, if we stay healthy, if our tests are good, if there's no quarantines. But there's so many, just like you're seeing with college football, after game one in the SEC, after game one, there have been 94 college football games played. Not the Big Ten, not the Pac-12, not the Mountain West, not all of those, just the ones that have played. It was 94. It should have been 206, but only 94 had been played, and 25% of them had been either canceled or postponed. Well, you guys know this. If that's what's happening publicly relative to those games, that's also what's happening privately relative to the other sports, to the practices, to the workouts. It's the whole key is, can you create your own version of some protective level bubble and try to keep everybody going in the same direction and nobody escape the bubble? That's the whole key.
Because that contact tracing kills you, right?
Again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not saying I have all the answers. I've studied this a lot. And it consumed me early on with, okay, typical coach, type A personality. Let me figure out how this works. And like, you don't want anybody to get the virus. That's the first thing, because we don't know the long-term effects. No matter, science hasn't had a chance to catch up to see, is this myocarditis? Is that going to impact athletes different than it is marry your next door neighbor? Like, we don't have the evidence to know that. So you don't want anybody to get it. But when somebody gets it, the tracing, it's completely different than a football roster. If you're saying you can have 85 kids on the football team and the Power Five schools are saying, yeah, but if 53 suit up, you can still play the game. Okay, well, that's 32 kids that could potentially be out for tracing and or positive tests. Okay, but a basketball roster, they can't absorb that same percentage of loss. You can't play, in my opinion, you don't want to play a game with five kids. And so because of contact tracing and because you don't want your kids to get the virus, the way you have to operate relative to a basketball roster, I think has to be even more protocol, so to say, in how you're trying to protect everybody, because you can't absorb it the way football is numerically.
That's crazy. Culture. I really appreciate you doing this. I mean, I know that.
I appreciate you guys allowing me to be a part of it. I appreciate it a lot.
D Square, Jimmy Butler.
Seth, I remember doing games and Jimmy, a couple games with Marquette when they had Jimmy Butler. And I thought Jimmy Butler was really, really good. But I got to tell you, I never imagined him being this good. And good for that kid. And what a great story Buzz told us. What a great, sometimes you luck into a recruit. You know what I mean? Sometimes it just kind of falls. It doesn't happen often.
But that's unbelievable. Think about it. That dude went from no visit, faxing in McDonald's, NBA Finals, and maybe the baddest dude, including LeBron. Yeah, the dude had 40 without a three.
Seth, he got a chance. If they can make a comeback here, he's going to end up being the Finals MVP. Now, it's a big if because LeBron is still LeBron. But I'll tell you this, I don't know who's watching, I don't know who's not watching, but my fat ass is watching.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.